All right. Let's get fired up here.
Maximum freedom. Read.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom. Read Rothbard.
Hey, you guys. It's the Actual Anarchy podcast, where we talk about movies from a Rothbardian and anarcho-capitalist perspective. And tonight, we're going to be talking about the 1980s classic, directed by Richard Donner and produced by Steven Spielberg, The Goonies, in honor of me being actually where they shot some of the movie. And so that was why we chose this one. And we've got a bang-up guest coming up. I think you'll be familiar with her. She was on last week, and she's back at it again. We'll introduce her in the last night's course in the show. And you can find the show notes for this episode at actualenergy.com/254, talking about The Goonies, by Dick Donner, directed, and featuring Sloth and Corey Haim. No, Corey Feldman, one of the two Coreys, and Samwise Gamgee, right, Robert?
Yeah, and Josh Brolin, the No Country for Old Men guy. So that's always fun to see these guys at their young, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed selves.
Yeah, this is a movie that seemed to launch a lot of the young actors' careers, and it was sort of this culmination of Hollywood blockbuster talent with Spielberg, Donner, and I think Chris Columbus was a screenwriter on this. So all these powers combined to Voltron, a cult classic that upon reviewing the last couple of nights, doesn't hold up as well as when I was a kid, but still pretty fun.
Yeah, it's still a fun adventure film, and it definitely takes its influences. I mean, it wears them on its sleeve. It's quite obvious about the adventure films, the serials, the Flash Gordon-y type stuff that Spielberg loves so much, that you know that had him invent Indiana Jones. So this is just like, what if Indiana Jones was a kid and he had a bunch of friends? What kind of adventure would they have? Well, here you go.
Right. Yeah. And there's actually a moment in this film when we were watching where I thought they actually said Indiana Jones in the dialogue. And I went back and replayed it and just like, they said something else, like something about the bones or something when they were up in the attic. And it's like, oh, darn. You know, I thought they snuck that little nugget in there like they did with the Gremlins thing. And with the Superman, because Richard Donner did the Superman movies, or at least the first one and a half. Like he did Superman 2, but then a different director like came in and finished it, and then he came back and like did a Richard Donner cut. I'm a little fuzzy on the details around that. I'm sure you probably know a bit more about it.
Not really. I do recall that there is a Donner cut of Superman 2. I don't know if another director came in or if there's a lot of studio interference. I don't know. Sounds like you know more than I do, Daniel.
Well, I've just depleted the extent of my knowledge on this, like I do
Fantastic.
Most subjects.
Fantastic.
Just talking out of my ass.
Just headlines.
Yeah, if I'm talking just about something headlines. For more than like 10 or 15 seconds, we've delved into making shit up territory.
Just let me talk. Don't ask me any questions. Don't dig any deeper.
Hey, I am the science, buddy.
I understand. Don't ask questions. They've trained the entire population not to ask questions, so... You know,
yeah, I can probably get away with
just
this
obey.
Way easier now than I ever could before. Because, yeah,
just
questioning anything, dissenting in any way is now frowned upon.
You're going against the bullies? That's not bueno.
All right. Well, speaking of bullies, we have the antithesis of a bully. We have the wonderful Raylene Lightheart, who will be joining us right after this intermission from us, the Last Nighters. Hey everyone, it's Daniel Elwood and Robert Paul Johnson, and I are the Last Nighters. We're going to be talking about the Goonies tonight. We got our Baby Ruths all ready. We're actually a glass of wine here. And you can find the show notes and more at lastnighters.com/197. And tonight we have a returning guest and something about equal pay or something about genders. We're having the wonderful Raylene Lightheart on two times back to back. Welcome back, Raylene. You were with us just last week. I can't believe that we convinced you to come back yet again. But why don't you just remind everyone what you do, and we'll get into the Goonies.
Oh, okay. Well, I love podcasting. I've done podcasting for a while now, but mostly I'm just a mom that homeschools. I'm into voluntarism. I'm into healing work. And I always like to talk about the principles of anarchy and voluntarism inside as well as outside for total self-ownership. So it's my kind of my passion. And you know, I love movies, especially old ones. Uh-oh. I can't hear you.
Hold on. Uh-oh. Daniel muted himself.
I muted myself because I was talking nonsense like I was talking about earlier. No, I was saying, and you love us, or at least you've said so in the past.
I love you guys so much. Yes, I love you guys so much. Yes, you know it. That's why this is like my favorite podcast to do, to be honest with you. I love it.
Oh, well, that's very nice to hear. Thank you very much. And in the earlier portion, when we were recording for pre-show bonus content available for Patreon people, go to lastnighters.com/Patreon. You were actually up on my level, similar to where Robert is now. But now we got the beans above the Frank. So we switched it around a little bit.
We brought that movie up last week.
Oh, we did. Yeah.
How'd you get the beans above the Frank, right? Yeah, we literally just talked about something about Mary, gross out comedies and stuff like that. So
yeah, we've got a bleeder. All right. So Robert, can you give me some sound effects in just a moment as we reveal?
I don't know what a Goonie sound effect would be.
You could do it on the spot here.
All right.
Adventure music.
Hey, you guys. We're doing the Goonies. Yeah. That's right.
We're doing it.
I don't know why I'm like treating it like a reveal. Like the literal title of the episode is The Goonies. Movie review.
Should not be a surprise to anyone.
No. I mean, except for maybe the illiterate who are only now hearing us say what we're doing. But they wouldn't have seen the logo show up because they wouldn't be able to read that either. Either way, how we usually do this is with the Yale Google description. So we'll get underway here. This is a 1985 family adventure film, 1 hour and 54 minutes, rated PG. And it's a hard G, PG, because there's a lot of dick and fart jokes in this one, I think. So here is the stats on this: 7.8 out of 10 on IMDb, 77% out of Rotten Tomatoes, 4 out of 5 on Common Sense Media, and 90% of Google users love it. It's now featured on HBO at present, and it is, the description reads, old-fashioned yarn about a band of adventurous kids who take on the might of a property-developing company which plans to destroy their home to build a country club. When the children discover an old pirate map in the attic, they follow it into an underground cavern in search of lost treasure, but come up against plenty of dangerous obstacles along the way. Released date June 7, 1985, directed by Dick Donner. Filmed in and around Cannon Beach, and Astoria, Oregon. The story is partially by Steven Spielberg and Chris Columbus. Box office of $124 million. Robert, your opening bid, please.
Well, The Goonies. Yeah, it is a little bit more adult than you would originally assume, I suppose, or at least juvenile slash adult, I guess you could say. It's a frenetically paced film. The movie, once it gets going, once they leave the house, it's just bang, bang, bang. Go. It doesn't really linger too long in any one place. It's got a fair amount of, like you said, Power Ranger-y combined talent behind the film. But as such, it kind of feels like a mishmash or a hodgepodge. It doesn't necessarily feel like one man's vision to create this thing, it feels a little bit more like an all-star game. Like you would watch the NBA all-star game, you know, they're not the best teams. So they're not going to create, like they don't have the best team play
or defense,
but they have a lot of individual talent. So you're not going to get the behind the back passes and that kind of stuff, but you'll get the one-on-ones going to the rack for the slam dunks. How's that sports analogy for you?
The best.
It's really, really good. It plays like the villains in the movie, the Fratellis, they are played about as lighthearted as you can. The tone is so lighthearted in this film. Like at some point they're not even the least bit scary, even when they almost have the heroes in their clutches. Cause even when they do capture them, they're like, oh, okay, let's go outside into the pirates. Okay. We're holding you guys kind of, we're trying to be threatening and scary, but we're not really. So I don't know if the tension is super high in this film, but it's not really trying to have a lot of tension. It's more just about having a good time with a kind of a wacky cast of characters, and it definitely succeeds at that. You've got some memorable characters in this film that maybe you watched this movie once in 1985, you still remember. You still remember Sloth. You still remember Chunk. You probably still remember even Data, even if you don't remember his name. You remember that little Asian kid with all the gadgets.
Oh, you know, I forgot to ask you to do the truffle shuffle before you did your intro here.
I don't have the stomach fat anymore. I'm sorry.
I'm too hot for that, guys.
I'm sorry, you guys. I'm too amazing beach
too
body shape.
Sculpted.
Listen.
Too rock hard.
Oh, yeah, me too.
If you wanted me to show off my washboard, no. So yeah, it's not the greatest movie of all time, but I don't think it was really trying to be. I think it was just trying to take you on a fun adventure, much like Indiana Jones style, a la with kids. So no, I don't think it's trying to amaze you, but I think it succeeded for the most part.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. And when you watch it as a kid, and I'm thinking like early teens, it's a lot of fun because you identify with the other kids, and like we were always going on adventures and going down to the frog pond and catching frogs or like crawling into tunnels and getting into things. So you can kind of like see yourself in that.
Well, but especially for the time when you would just jump on your bike and go somewhere. And that's what they do in this movie. They just jump on their bikes and ride.
Yeah. And it's like be back before dark, maybe, you know?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, what? maybe I'll tell you where I'm going. I don't know.
Yeah, it's so different now, man. Oh, geez. Like, I mean, my kids are still a little bit young, but I can't imagine even if they're like 4 or 5 years older, like 13 or 14, like just riding bikes and being out, not knowing where they are.
Yeah.
Well, and even if you were trusted your children to do that, you wouldn't trust the neighbors not to try to get you arrested or have them stolen from you if you did let them. I mean, even if you trusted your children to be self-sufficient, not get lured into white vans, you know, like the whole business, and your children are probably going to be very self-sufficient when they're in this age group of the kids that were casted. It's that you also can't trust your neighbors to mind their own damn business. I mean, that's real.
Yeah, right? That is a different cultural shift where I don't remember my parents ever worrying or telling me, you know, tell me where you are or, you know, make sure you checking in or whatever, because I'm worried about somebody reporting seeing you outside away without adult supervision or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just a different time. I think my 5-year-old sister at one point got reported, hey, there's a little girl all by herself. But she was 5 and she was a tiny little 5-year-old. So maybe whoever reported her some slack. But yeah, it's definitely a different time now, like Relaine's saying.
Yeah. I remember being at your house and like occasionally checking in with my mom, like calling home and being like, yeah, I'm over at Robert's. But Yeah, it was. I mean, other than that, I mean, we could have been anywhere, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, my point was that watching this as a kid at that age, you definitely like identify it, and the plot holes and like the motivations and things like don't seem to matter as much. I tried watching this with my kids who are 8 and 6, and yeah, that was a bit of a mistake. We made it about 15 minutes in after having to pause it like every
Told you that watch out because it's a little naughtier than you might remember it.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's way naughtier than I was remembering.
I did the same thing with my children years ago with my first two kids, so I remember that moment. Yep.
Yeah, and then there's some moments that are just like a bit too scary for them. Mm-hmm. And so we had to like stop it and explain, and then we're like, you know what, it's probably too much. And so then my wife and I had to finish it together. And the movie, watching it as an adult, definitely does not hold up. Like all of a sudden they're over here and like for random reasons. And then all of a sudden Samwise Gamgee is like on a mission, unknowing, you know, like there's no particular reason why his motivation seemed to change or he became like almost in a relationship with One-Eyed Willie, which was also a bit of there's a lot of dick jokes in this one.
He's almost a teenager, you know.
I think Spielberg's a creep, and I think he's always been a creep, and I think that's why. Okay, we can't forget who made this movie. All right, so and he's a freaking creep. But you know what? Spielberg is really good at doing is casting children in his movies. He knows what kids are magical and have a lot of personality, and he really works that to his advantage in everything he's done with children in it. I don't like Spielberg personally. I find him to be irritating, and I have a lot of issues with a lot of his movies, but I got to hand it to him about what he is good at. And he's good at making nostalgia pieces. He really is.
Well, E.T. obviously started a lot of careers as kids, right? Drew Barrymore, and I don't know if actually many of the other kids turned into much beyond that, but the kid Data, who, you're right, Robert, I remember there was a wacky Asian kid who had all these inventions, but I didn't remember that his name was Data, but he was the kid in Indiana Jones.
No Time for Love, Dr. Jones.
Dr. Jones.
God, that's racist. I'm sorry. I think it is. I think I broke a rule. I just love Short Round. Temple of Doom was my favorite because it was gross. And
yeah, that's where they eat the brains.
Killed monkey brains. Yes, of course. It was disgusting. Snake Surprise. Yes, I loved Temple of Doom because it was so horrific, pulling out a beating heart out of their chest. I mean, come on. I was there for the, yes, I felt like a badass because I could handle it. You know,
yeah,
all the other kids couldn't.
I remember that one. Some people didn't like as much because the tone was so much darker.
Yeah.
So they'll say they like Temple of Doom. Oh wait, Raiders, yeah. And then Last Crusade because Sean Connery. I mean, he just makes
Last Crusade's the best one, I think. Great.
And then
it's the most complete movie. Yeah.
Whatever the fourth one was.
Stop. Stop it right now.
though that one's probably like the most like realistic.
Crystal Skull, really, yeah, Daniel?
With aliens?
You just made me speechless. Do you know what you just did? I'm just like,
He survived the nuclear blast by getting in a refrigerator? Is that what you're talking about? The monkeys attack the Nazis?
Terminator 3.
Because he somehow has control over the monkeys?
Stop.
Yeah, I don't know. See what the problem is.
Okay, fair enough. Well, maybe you'll enjoy the fifth movie that they're making right now.
Right, with old man Harrison Ford. He like broke his shoulder.
They're gonna wheel him out in a wheelchair for the rest of the movie. It's gonna be fantastic.
And his two earrings, like, just stop. Like, what is he doing? Harrison Ford he's my first crush. Was Harrison Ford? Was Han Solo?
Yeah.
Big time.
Yeah, right?
he was so cool.
Yeah, and you know when you're like, ew, like all of a sudden to Harrison Ford, and it was actually, Indiana Jones 4, I said, that is enough. I was angry. I felt betrayed. I was so upset. I literally, you guys, it was like just this whole paradigm crashing on me when I realized that I'd wasted my entire youth and that I had just this just strange love for this man that just sold himself out. I was like, he betrayed me personally when he made that movie. I was very upset. was bad. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I can't blame the guy. Here's $25 million. Will you reprise the role?
I can blame the guy. I can blame the guy, okay? I can't, because he made that. He starts dating Calista Flockhart. I'm like, who is this dude? What is he doing? Okay. Then he makes some shitty movie with Anne Heche. I was like, what the hell is happening? And it's just gotten worse. And then Crystal Skull came out. And I was like, you know what? You're dead to me. Dead.
Mm. Was the Anne Heche one, was that he was like a pilot of like a pontoon plane or something?
Just shoot me. I don't know. It was bad.
All right. $12. All right. Let's get back to the Goonies here. So my point was, my kid's too young to watch it. Mm-hmm. Now I'm too old to watch it. And mm-hmm. in my prime, when I was out there doing this adventure shit, this was like the coolest movie around.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, but it's a movie of its time. I mean, it's a time capsule. I don't think it was necessarily meant to be enjoyed. I mean, that culture of kids existed then and existed for us maybe for another decade, but I don't know if it'll ever exist again. I don't
like this movie. They still have that inner adventurer inside of them. We still do. We read all these old movies, or I mean all these old books, and we still have that spirit of adventure. This is why we were all drawn to it. Spielberg is a lot older than us. He has that spirit of adventure inside of him. He remembers being a little boy. He knows what excites him. We all still love and wanted a good Indiana Jones because we all still have that. The time capsule, yes, it's from the 80s. The truth is, it's not a well-done movie. And it is a real slap in the face to watch it now and realize it's just, I had a grouchy attitude about it. Okay. So when I watched it recently, I was like, oh, this is, every time I watch it, it keeps getting worse for me. So it's been kind of a layered approach. But I think that if my 12-year-old watched it and my 9-year-old watched it, if you're okay with the word shit over and over and over again, a statue, a knockoff statue of David, right? His penis falls off and they try to glue the penis back on and
upside down.
Yeah. And then kissing scene and that's pretty much the worst of it. Right.
Well, there's a lot of, you know,
innuendo
and gun violence. And
see, I don't mind that so much.
You know, I think that inside every human heart beats a lust for adventure to a certain extent, but I don't know, 2020 kind of changed my mind about that. It sure seems like that quote that Daniel always likes to quote, that people would rather have security rather than dangerous liberty or whatever he says.
That's why they want to watch it on a movie though, friend. They don't want to actually do it because they're wussies, but they want to watch it and pretend that's them.
So they're going to live vicariously through Chunk?
Yeah, everybody lives vicariously through freaking, what are they watching now? Like, not James Bond anymore. What is it now? That they're watching TV shows on Amazon with Jim from The Office pretending to be some kind of
Jack Ryan.
Yeah. I mean, yes, they're all still doing that. That's not going to change. In fact, we're probably going to get more of it again because people are such wusses. We are. That's what my prediction. I think that everyone's just living in a simulation. Of their own.
Well,
device.
That's kind of my point though, that I don't know if the generation, because I don't see kids running around on their bicycles. It's just not a thing you see anymore.
Yeah, I don't know about the video game.
Yeah. Maybe they would be, the only time they went outside was to play like Pokemon Go to catch your like Pokemons. Now you don't see them on their bicycles riding around the neighborhood.
So you think kids today watching this, like 12 to 14, would just be like, what's going on here? This doesn't make any sense. Like,
they I just don't know if they'd identify with it. They wouldn't look back on this movie or watch it when they're a kid and then look back on it with nostalgia. Like, oh yeah, I remember when I used to do things like that.
Yeah.
I don't think kids are growing up like that.
It's like when we see movies with like an airport and people can actually go and meet you at the gate.
Yeah.
Like, I remember that. It's was like,
so
thing.
Quaint. I remember that used to be a thing, yeah.
They're still having movies without people wearing masks, which is going to be gone in about 2 years. They're going to have no movies with people walking around without masks, probably.
Probably.
It's like, Oh, did I just ruin everything for everybody?
Black pill.
Can I again? I'm sorry, guys. It's been a week, I guess. Did everyone watch this movie and go, oh, it's the original Stranger Things, just not as good? Did anyone do that?
It definitely has some of that vibe for sure.
It did. And do you guys remember watching Super 8, that movie Super 8?
Yeah, Super 8, sure.
Mm-hmm. And there's a recipe for it, right? But this had such a Stranger Things feel to it, and I realized that was probably a huge inspiration for it. I think Stranger Things, the quality is banging comparatively, but I mean, this is the
especially 80s. The first season for sure, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. I agree. I think Stranger Things went downhill after that. What season are they on now? 3 or 4? I think
they're
I only watched
4 is about to come out.
Okay, so we probably only watched the first 2, and I really enjoyed the first season, and the second season not so much. And we might have gotten rid of Netflix before the 3rd one came out.
Season 3 involved the most ridiculous plot of all time, where there was a secret Russian base underneath the mall that the kids worked at.
Oh, okay. Definitely didn't know that one.
Yeah. I thought it was fun, and it reminded me of Goonies, though. It did. It was exactly the same. Oh, it's underneath this restaurant that must have been there at the time. Come on. It's the same.
Okay, but the tone totally changed. Like the first season, there's not that goofy, silly, slapsticky.
Yeah.
And the Russian villain are the stupidest people you've ever met.
Same as the Italian guys. Like it's the same, you guys. This was the Goonies season. Was season 3.
All right. So speaking of that restaurant, Robert, that reminded me of that scene in one of the recent Star Wars movies where he had the freaking dagger.
Yep.
He stood in the exact spot.
Yep.
And lined everything up.
Yep.
All right. Impossible. And
But Goonies did it better.
They did do it better.
Star Wars ripped it off, but it was way stupider when Star Wars did it.
Yeah. Yeah, 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 I agree. The Star Wars one, and it might have been a nod to this, right?
Yeah.
It must have been. Yeah.
I mean,
George Lucas and Steven Spielberg are good friends. It had to be.
So maybe that actually salvages some of the Star Wars version of it, because it's okay, if it's an interior nod, inside joke.
No. Then... Nope.
Yeah, you have to make it known. If you're gonna make a nod, it needs to be an obvious nod.
When Sloth tears off the shirt and he's got the Superman shirt.
Absolutely. And the Errol Flynn, I'm just writing on my notes, Errol Flynn, that was beautiful. That was like crowning jewel of the movie. Obviously, and again, that it feels like that was an inspiration to this idea as watching all those old movies. Who doesn't like that crap? That crap.
Okay, what was the most unrealistic scene for you, Daniel?
The most,
and obviously that's a leading question because I have a scene that I have in mind that is obviously the most unrealistic.
I mean, there's so many unrealistic. Yeah. I mean, just to think.
Yeah, that, there's a clear number one in my mind.
What's the one that you can remember the most that stands out?
Well, I mean, almost everything in it is totally ridiculous. But I mean, as far as like the structure of this cave labyrinth built by these pirates with all these booby traps and water slides.
And the Rube Goldberg machine with the ball, the bowling ball. Yeah.
Like, obviously, you know.
There's obviously a call back to the house, but still like ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah,
because
yeah,
it could have totally just opened the gate, because the way the string was like it didn't unlock it. You could have just walked in. That
right.
was ridiculous.
But if we're talking about just one element, I think it was the water pipes and then moving them up and down and the guy like trying to drink the water. Like, oh.
That was the only anything time that they showed the bad guys, other than when they came to drop off the paperwork to sign, and then at the very end where they really bring in the country club guys, that one scene where they're at the like banging on the pipes and then it was messing with the people at the country club, that was the only reference. But how 80s was that? I mean, how many movies have we seen where things like that happened, where the good guys are in this one spot and it's messing with the water and the pipes and everything that was happening? That just felt so 80s to me, but it was so out of place in that movie, wasn't it? Like,
yeah,
so out of place.
Okay. Yeah, it felt more like a Caddyshack moment or something else, some other kind of silly 80s comedy movie.
I mean, I'm glad it's there because it does make it like more farcical or whatever. But, you know, the Google description talks about like they're going to lose their house to this developer who's going to build a country club. Like, I feel like that entire premise is sort of only talked around a little bit. Like, it's sort of partway presented, but not clearly enough to where it's articulated as a driving motivation. And, you know, they say, well, this house might be a golf course when, you know, when they tear it down the house. But they're obviously on this like hilly area, like in Astoria.
In a neighborhood?
Yeah, there's no way there's going to be a golf course, country club in that kind of place, unless they're going to level it. Like, you know, in Seattle, they had all these hills that got leveled. And now it's an area where like Amazon is. Mm-hmm. And actually, there were some holdouts, people who weren't going to sell their land. And so they still had their house on the top of these like they bulldozed like all the surrounding land around
it's
them.
An up situation.
So, yeah,
so like a cartoon.
They called them spite mounds, and so people still lived up there because they were like the holdouts, not willing to sell their land. But anyway, it was very unbelievable, and I felt like the whole premise, the driving force behind this, just didn't really hold up to any scrutiny. Though, because of the type of movie it is, it probably doesn't really matter. But related to them getting foreclosed on, it's not as if the land developer is like doing anything untoward,
nefarious. Yeah,
these guys haven't paid their mortgage,
so why is the whole neighborhood not paying their mortgage? What's going on that they're all not paying their mortgage when they don't seem to work at the same place?
You know? Right. So it just feels like, oh, we just need to have some sort of.
It's a bare bones excuse to have an adventure.
Yeah, well, it's like all those movies where, oh, we need $50,000, like in Dirty Work. Or
it's Dirty Work or Half-Baked. It's any movie, or Happy Gilmore. It's any movie where we need a bunch of money, so we got to go do something ridiculous to get the money.
Even though I think they wanted to do it anyway because they wanted to have an adventure. I mean, in the beginning, it wasn't even about finding money. It was going on one last adventure. The impetus kind of did evolve and change, and they never told us that. I mean, like, even though they wanted to go do it, it was never like, let's go do it and find money so we could save our family. They were like, let's just go do this one bit last thing together before we have to move. Right.
Right. Yeah. That was what's his name's big speech. Like, up there is their time and down here it's our time. This is our last time.
It was so good. I have a thought for you. I know that I want to get back to you, Robert, and what your question was, because I want to hear your example, but I wrote, the archetypes as Ninja Turtles. I have Mikey, who's the philosopher, and the leader is obviously Leonardo. I got Chunk as Michelangelo. I have Mouth as Raphael. Mm-hmm. And I have Data as Donatello.
Yep, for
and
sure.
And then I got Brand as Casey Jones. I have Andy as April. And Steph is just a badass. No Splinter, but who's Steph? I don't know, but I love her. She's my favorite. And that's it. But what do you guys think of that?
I think you're right on. And that's that strong. Actually
Thanks.
Ties into another point, and that is the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles video game, impossible to defeat. And there was a Goonies video game that I vaguely remember playing. I think it
I
was
never
a Nintendo
beat it.
Game.
Yeah. There was a original NES is the only one that ever had a Goonies video game, but I do believe that there's a Goonies board game out there somewhere.
That sounds like something that might have come later, maybe?
Yes.
Okay.
Might be an RPG. I'm not sure.
Mm.
Anyway, so thank you for that. So, Robert, what's your ridiculous part of the movie?
So, I thought the most ridiculous thing, and I know they set the movie up. They set up the country club guys as being, you know, anxious to get these signatures, anxious to close this deal, anxious to finalize the whatever. So they show up at the house, but then they show up at the beach where with the paperwork ready to sign when Do they even really know that the parents are going to be there? How do they, is this just some fortuitous conflux? Because the movie doesn't explain that at all. It's just everybody in the movie just shows up at the end at the beach. And then he's like, oh, by the way, now that you're here, here, sign this paperwork.
Were they following the parents?
Just never happened ever.
I was wondering that also. I was like, did they hear the dynamite and then all go towards it? The police, they're a small town. Maybe the cops are hanging out in the living room, drinking coffee, waiting to hear some tips with the parents. And then the real estate guys are outside following them to the beach.
Yeah, but was there even like,
we didn't get any of that
when the kids were missing?
There was none of that. There, we don't get any perspective outside of the kids' perspective. So we don't know the town, the anxious town, the oh no, our kids are missing. Oh no, the news people are all trying to find the kids, and oh, we found them, and here's the live broadcast, and the kids are down here on the beach. And then the real estate guys go, oh, this might be a good time to get a signature from the parents, because the parents are going to want to be down at the beach too. None of that. They just magically all show up all at the same time. They have the paperwork on them.
Typical Spielberg, guys. This is why I don't like Spielberg. It's typical.
It was just all too easy and wrapped up in a nice little bow at the very end in this one scene. And it just smacked of pure Hollywood ridiculousness. I'll take all the rest of the movie. Take it all the rest. But the last scene was just jumping the shark for me.
It's really bad. Like, you guys, I was such a grouch. You know, I'm a pretty positive person. I think that you guys know that. And I mean, Dan has lectured me that I can't have more than one favorite because it means that nothing's your favorite. He literally gave me the same lecture he gives his child, his 4-year-old at the time, I believe. Okay. Yeah. So I just want to point that out, that I've had to have a talking to because every movie's my favorite. But this movie was just pissing me off because I felt so old and curmudgeon-y, you know? The ridiculousness, I was so mad. I'm flouncing in bed watching the movie, and I'm just like being a brat. And it's because these children are hiding in the restaurant from the bad guys, and they're all screaming, shut up.
They do the same thing in the cavern too.
They're underneath the floorboards and they go, what? They scream, and then the next person screams, and they're like, oh, shh, shh. And then they're screaming again as if nobody could hear them.
Yeah, and they're like, shh. No, I don't know if you guys know this, but if you want to hide, you don't yell shh at anybody, because shh is louder than mouthing words. It just is. Shush is loud. And if you really want to hide from somebody, you know that. All right? Everyone can hear a shush. We can all hear it. This is so idiotic to me. And it was just so many things. Like Chunk, of course, he's so excited that if he's going to smash his pizza or his sandwich and his milkshake against the window watching this car chase in the beginning. And gasoline on the ground and shooting it from the car is going to set everything on fire. I mean, you got to suspend reality from the very first moment you watch this movie, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. But the being loud when they're hiding, and that made me mad. If it was one kid like Chunk, which is kind of the fall guy and the comic relief and all that, if he's the idiot, that's fine. But they're all idiots, and it made me mad. So they would have got caught, and I got angry about it. So that's, I have a look at my notes, says too noisy.
Yeah, you contrast that scene with that scene in The Matrix, where they are sliding down the inside wall and the Smiths are all around, and then like Neo sneezes and that's it. Or no, Cypher, actually Cypher, who's in this movie, sneezes.
It happens. Yeah.
Like he covers his mouth and he sneezes, and they're like, somebody's in the walls. These kids are screaming underneath the floorboards, and it's an old rickety place, not well insulated. I think they would have heard him.
Yeah, there's no insulation at all between the basement and the floor. Like you can literally see through the cracks and everything. Yeah. But yeah, you guys just reminded me. So our kids watched the first 10 or 15 minutes. I had to explain suicide. Mm-hmm. I had to explain.
I got a slide.
How Epstein didn't kill himself. I had to explain who the bad guys were and why they were shooting at people. And so this is definitely not a young kids movie.
No.
Definitely not.
My parents videotaped this on a VHS, you know, off of television for me as a kid. That's how I got to see this movie, because my parents were cheapskates and they didn't do anything for me unless it was on television already. So they videotaped it. So do you know that I never saw any of that opening scene because they didn't start videotaping it until the car chase in town. So I never got to see that part until I was an adult. And they used to edit out the language. So that was taken out. The broken penis was taken out. So I didn't get to see any of that. So the first time I put it on for my children, it was shocking. Same thing.
I feel like the audience was like teenagers and up for the most part. Teenagers to, I don't know, 18, 20 maybe back in the day. I don't know. Maybe adults were watching this or taking their kids to it, I suppose. But it was mostly like a teenage thing. Back when teenagers would get together and go out and do things and go to the mall by themselves, that kind of thing.
Go to the arcade, go to the mall, go see a movie.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing. Like, why would anyone go to a movie called The Goonies? Like, did The Goonies mean anything?
It was called The Goondocks. They have pictures of the kids on the set back in the day. And I believe that there's a line talking about it, and that spot in Astoria were called the Goondocks. It was supposed to be a poor area, but we don't know any details. That's it. I mean, we're giving.
Yeah, but why would a movie with worldwide release, like, why would anyone know what that is?
Okay, so this is what I think. It's the same as the Gremlins or Revenge of the Nerds. I think the Goonies, I think it was supposed to, they were supposed to be outliers. And they were supposed to feel, like, just like in Stranger Things, they were the nerdy kids. And
yeah, the Losers Club, that kind of thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm, yeah. So they were just trying to popularize a word that would stand for that, hoping it would take off, I think. That's what I think.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, very much like in It with the Loser Club. Yeah. Is that what they're called? The Loser Club?
It, yeah. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. All right. Well,
yeah.
So it's just a name that they stuck with and happened to be, became a word because of the movie.
They try. It was forced. It was definitely part of it. It's branding, I think. I think it was supposed to be mean something, and that when they're poor, and it's like they're owning it and reclaiming it, and it's a part of their identity, but it's kind of an FU also. That's a whole thing. That's a shtick. They do that in movies a lot, especially when they talk about people from the poor side of town. They have a specific name for them in different movies and books.
Or like when Hillary Clinton referred to the basket of deplorables, and then all the Trump supporters started calling themselves deplorables.
It's the same mentality, absolutely. So it's kind of like if everyone calls you a bad name because you're from the other side of the tracks, then you wear it with pride and you're like in your own little street gang, you know, like the Jets and stuff, you know.
But then if anyone else ever uses that word, then they get in trouble.
It's a slur. Yeah. It's reclaiming it. So, and that is a human thing culturally. We see it all the time. So, yeah. And I think he was just making up his own name for it, or that's what they were doing in the movie. And then I think that they were hoping it would kind of pick up and mean something. And I think that's what they were trying to portray. We didn't understand that they didn't seem very poor. Chunk is by himself in a restaurant, buying himself a milkshake, for goodness sake. When you're poor, you just can't go out and buy yourself a milkshake at a restaurant and eat out all the time. I mean, there's a lot of, and you don't have a cleaning lady or somebody to help you pack. If you're poor, if you're not paying your mortgage, you're going to hire some Hispanic lady to do all your packing for you. No, you do it yourself. But there's a lot that doesn't always add up. Again, I feel like Spielberg. Like, it's just whatever's convenient for the storytelling, but he does make magical storytelling. He still creates it, that sense of adventure. He does really well with that. So
he does, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, so even though it's not entirely coherent and we don't understand the motivations or the backstory, it's still kind of a fun movie.
It's all the stuff kids will like.
With a lot of practical, you know, effects going on, and I'm sure those are really cool. And Robert, you were saying that the One-Eyed Willy version is like a scaled up version of what we see earlier on in the house. So there's like the echo of that, or the premonition, or what do you call it? Foreshadowing.
Foreshadowing, yeah.
Well, he also
with
said...
With the Rube Goldberg machine. That's right. What I was talking about. Yeah.
Mousetrap? Like Mousetrap? Yeah. Like the game?
Right.
Okay,
and this is at Mike Walsh's house, right? So
yeah,
Data has all these individual inventions, mm-hmm. but Mikey has the Rube Goldberg stuff, and that's how he is like Willy.
Right. And but they this say is all like, a lot alike.
You have to like piece it together. It's sort of just like inferred in a vague sense.
It all comes together at the very end and last scene, though. I mean, poorly, but I mean, for kids, it's enough, right? But he says, I think we're a lot alike. He wanted to go up there and have an alone moment to talk to Willy. And everyone, I'm watching this and I'm laughing, going, how come I never realized how weird it is? Because all those kids have been like, screw you, we're coming up there. You're not going to sit up there and have a long conversation with this, with the pirate that's dead without us. And then they do kind of poke fun at that silliness by turning around and they're all standing there watching. Right.
All right. Oh, here's another thing that's unbelievable and weird. When he gets up into Willie's chambers, something pops down and they reveal like this board
that
above them.
Something.
Something's written on
it. A bunch of writing on it. Yeah.
They don't bother to read it.
What? That bothered me too.
They immediately smash through it.
Yeah,
it's like, well, why would you think that this thing should be smashed through?
That's
right.
The first place they went to.
That happened way too fast. They should have had at least a moment of dialogue where somebody
translate something and be like,
I bet they did, and they had to cut it. I bet they did.
Probably.
Because there's a lot of connecting moments that didn't quite make sense. Like they barely escaped through this new trial that they have to go through. Let's say like the piano situation, which was always my favorite as a child, by the way, I love that part. There's no way those little 10-year-olds could have kept Josh Brolin from falling. You watch it now, you're like, that physically is impossible, but okay. So they get through, and then here's the bad guys just walking around the long way. What?
Yeah.
What? What the hell? Like they should be able to get through. And you never, that was one of the only times where you actually saw how the bad guys got through after they did, right? You don't ever watch them trying to problem solve after the kids got through and the booby traps go off. We don't get to see how they go through, which I think would be really fun to watch. Like if they ever did they could do short films of just showing the different segments of how they actually had to get through, which would be really funny. Like now, in my opinion, I think
completely agree. Completely agree. That'd be a lot of fun.
An honest trailers to this, because I bet it would be pretty good. Be pretty funny.
Yeah.
One of those pitch meeting parents.
Oh, yeah. Pitch meeting. That'd be fantastic. Now that you guys mention it with the Rube Goldberg stuff, it makes me kind of want there to be a little bit of character development. Like, so it was Mike, right? His house there, he had the Rube Goldberg mousetrap thing.
Yeah. Yeah, like why does he?
He's the parallel.
Why does he have it? Other than to establish some kind of link between him and Willy, which I don't know if you need that. Why have it that he set this whole mousetrap thing up at his house and then not have it come into play later in the movie being like, oh, there's something wrong with this mousetrap that Willy set up. It's gotten old or something in the intervening years. Yeah. And I know how to fix it because I'm really good at these kinds of things.
You're right.
And then that would be like a completion of the circle for that
missed
guy's character.
Huge missed opportunity.
Yeah.
But can I just ask you guys, because why we have that? I had that shit. I was that person. I was the person setting up tripwires for no reason outside in my backyard or front yard through the woods in my little trails. I was always trying to dig pits and cover them up with sticks and leaves so that I could catch a bear or a bad guy. I was like 14.
You were making buoy pits?
At 14. You know, those girls that were at the mall. I was outside, yes, making traps in my woods because I wanted to. But you know what's really hard? Making a hole big enough for a fucking bear. You give up. I never finished it, but I tried and I was like, I'll slow them down, mother effers. Like, did you guys do things like that just to invent things? I did.
Oh yeah, yeah. We messed around with stuff all the time. We went down.
So that's why they showed it, because that kid's likes the idea of it, and it was just enough of a.
You know, I wonder. He had the asthma, right? And Brand even says, oh, he should live in a bubble or something, because he needs to be, you know, protected from illness, right? Like that's a foreign concept these days.
I'm sure whatever they gave him to protect him from illness gave him that asthma.
Right, probably. But I wonder if he had this Rube Goldberg machine to open the gate so that he wouldn't have to go down there and open it himself and get winded.
Could be, but then he'd have to reset it every time. Every time anybody walked through the gate, he'd have to reset the whole damn thing.
Ten times the amount of work.
It always was.
Ten times, more like 1,000 times the amount of work than just and having Chuck, somebody Chuck open up the gate themselves.
Yeah.
Guys, did that bother you so much? Because just I'm going to start over. The design of this setup made me so angry yesterday, because all it does is have a string that pulls the latch and opens the gate in the same way that he could have just reached over and opened it himself. Chuck could have. Yes. And that was very angering. I thought that was some BS. Like, they didn't even make it any kind of cool. It was, that was bad. Even I would
have. It was bad and pointless, other than to establish some kind of weird connection between him and Willie, that Willie liked to do the same thing he liked to do. It was missed opportunities, like you said, Brandon. One other thing. Did I miss a scene? Because at the end of the movie, Data is like Mr. like invention guy. And then his dad comes out and he's got like a bad invention. And then he's like, Data, you're my best invention ever. Was there something in the beginning about establishing Data's parents?
No, he just fails all the time at it, and he really struggles with his self-esteem and identity. It was very obvious to me. So you are correct. They could have done a better job developing the characters earlier on with some kind of backstory, especially with the ending. Okay, the ending was so momentous, beautiful, heartwarming. I have notes about it that I'd like to talk about. Wonderful parents in so many ways. So I did want to talk about that. And so you had that moment, but they did kind of allude to his things not working very well, right? And you could tell that he wasn't always successful in what he was creating with his inventions. So I think that's what it was about, that his dad also is kind of a work in progress with that. And then ultimately they shared a bond, and that it's better to try and to continue to create, even if it's not what other people would think was super valuable, right?
Mm-hmm. It's the best thing to do. So I must have missed a scene in the beginning. There must have been some scene.
It felt like, I mean, granted, the movie was already 2 hours long, so I'm sure that they didn't have a whole lot of extra space to fill in, but you almost need to establish some kind of rift between each of the main characters and their parents. And then them going missing causes the parents to be like,
should have appreciated
these things that bother me. Yeah, shouldn't actually bother me.
Especially
and then
for a kids movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would have really made the ending much more of an emotional hit home. Like for me, it felt pretty flat. I mean, I appreciated what we got, but it seems like missed opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I wanted Mouse Dad to kind of be a jerk, you know?
Absolutely. And he wasn't. He was a jerk to his dad.
Right.
He even called him son. Oh, can you turn that down, son? Right. You're like, when he said son, I was like, is this just the plumber calling that kid son because this is the 80s? Right. Like I was wondering. And then I was like, he's like, okay, dad, whatever. He's mouthing off to him. And it was surprising. You would have thought that he would have had a little of a rougher home considering his personality. Right.
Yeah.
I wrote good parents. And my favorite line of the whole movie was when they were going through the attic and they're finding all the treasure stuff, and which was an extended scene considering how many things were not in the movie, was that attic scene. And he's telling the story of One-Eyed Willie, and his brother Brand is telling him to stop. And he goes, my dad tells me the truth. And then he continues to tell the story. You guys, that is, I'm sorry, this is like, it was important to me. I thought this is something that is missing from media. This is something that's missing from what you hear children saying, and especially children's media, that it is rare to see children 100% trusting their parent.
And standing up for them.
Yeah, right. And having a positive male role model.
That's yeah, they're usually right. Buffoons.
Sorry, I have like goosebumps. You guys,
or that assholes.
That was the best line of the entire movie, in my opinion. I think it is rare, and I think it was beautiful, especially back in the 80s, because that is when the buffoonery of dads was hot. And I remember it was coming in hot all the time. Parents are stupid.
And it hasn't stopped.
No, it's only gotten worse. I mean, and so when he goes, my dad tells the truth, he stood up to his brother. His brother didn't argue with him. It was that his brother was becoming a skeptic and no longer believing in the magic, but his dad believed in the magic. It was something that was a hobby, at least, of his. I mean,
sure.
So much that he has his whole attic full of this stuff. And that it was showed that he had these really beautiful father-son bonding moments with Mikey, where he would share his passion with him and that sense of adventure, and they tell these stories. And you could tell that it really impacted Mikey, and that he wanted to share it with his brotherhood in a way. Right. I thought that was just one of the most amazing things to see in a movie. So just for that, I think it should get an extra point on my end. I thought it was beautiful.
Okay. All right. Well, I that reminds me of another thing from the attic, and that is Mikey handing the painting to Chunk, knowing the Chunk is going to drop it, so that Mikey can say, oh, I didn't drop it. It reminds me of, you know, how the Constitution apparently is supposed to prevent the government from infringing upon certain rights. Mm-hmm. But if they get the private sector to do it for them, or a bureaucratic agency to do it for them instead of Congress doing it or the executive branch mm-hmm. to do it, then they can claim, oh, well, then we didn't actually usurp the Constitution. This is a totally legit and totally above board thing that we can now mandate or require be done. So that Mikey was Biden handing the painting to OSHA to get around.
Sometimes the captain of a ship has to know how to get around the rules. Okay. We're talking about a boy that feels a kinship with a naughty, naughty pirate that stole a lot of stuff. So I think that Mikey, being a good hearted boy, still knows how to break the rules when he wants something really, really bad, doesn't he?
Like, right, yeah, and a way to get around it. Or it's similar to how with the First Amendment thing, like,
yeah,
they'll have the mainstream or the social media agencies do it for them at their behest. Yeah. But because it's a private entity doing it, they can claim, oh, it's not actually a violation of any amendment.
I thought it was pretty subtle for the way this movie's made, when he was counting it on his hands, like 1, 2, how long will it take him? But considering how overt all the other things in this movie are, because it is for children, I thought that was pretty subtle. I didn't pick that up when I was a kid. I didn't pick that part up. I didn't even notice it. You know, it was just.
Yeah. And they establish it with the David statue getting dropped.
Yeah.
Where they all like go, oh, Chunk, you're going to break it. You're going to break it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They so foreshadowing.
Foreshadowing. Well, let's foreshadow some ratings and reviews here. I don't know what we're going to rate it out of. How many
doubloons?
Doubloons. Okay. Or doubloons, right? Doubloons.
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 Like the balloons. The balloons.
The balloons.
Double oons. All right. So Robert, let's go with you for your final summary review. And how many doubloons out of 10 are you going to give this for the old one-eyed Willie?
Well, you know, it's definitely not a perfect movie. I still go back to my All-Star Game analogy, although, because, you know, usually you have a lot of individual talent, but the game is pretty sloppy. And you sometimes have, you know, All-Star talents bumping in and up against other All-Star talents and other egos. And maybe they didn't all get along, who knows? Or maybe this is just the time and the best thing they could do. But it definitely seems like, yeah, it probably ran a little long, and then they cut a fair amount out, is what it feels like. But it's still at the end, it's a fast moving, frenetic type pace movie that is, I don't think it's just meant to be, I think it's meant to more be enjoyed and less to be thought about. It's what it feels like to me. And it definitely feels like a movie of its time. It does a lot of 80s things. And some of those are good things, and some of those are not so good things. It's fun to see these actors that would go on to do a lot more work in their original roles. Because even then, like, you'd think that an entire movie made up of kid actors would be atrocious. But these kids, he got out of a lot. I mean, Donner, I don't know if he was the one working with them hand in hand, really getting good performances, or if it was just a matter of these kids all getting together and hanging out and getting to know each other and during rehearsals and getting comfortable with each other and becoming friends with each other and then just turning the cameras on. It seems to be that was some of what kind of captured the magic here, because a lot of times you'll get a kid actor in with a bunch of adults, and then the kid actor really sticks out like a sore thumb because the kid actor's not going to be able to act alongside these adult professionals one-on-one, and they're not going to hang out as friends, and they're not going to be as comfortable with them as if they're hanging out with kids their own age doing their own thing. So in a way, it's a smart way to build a movie. If you're going to do it with kids, do it with all kids or with a lot of kids, and have them be a tight-knit group. Because much like Raylene brought up Stranger Things, it's kind of like a lot like that, where the kids are all the same age and they probably are hanging out and getting to know each other and becoming friends and rehearsing together and just becoming really, really comfortable in these characters and being around each other. So that at least doesn't stick out like a sore thumb. But the movie itself is, it mostly achieves what it tries to do. Just don't think about it too much, and I think you'll enjoy it. I don't know if you're going to hate watch it like Raylene did, but just don't be too critical. Don't look at it with too much cynicism, and then I think you'll have an okay time with it. I can't say it's a masterpiece, but it definitely deserves some credit for what it did. Mm-hmm. In the fact that it's got the memorable cast of characters like they talked about in the intro that you still remember to this day, and I'll probably remember my entire life. So that in alone is an achievement. I'm going to give this one 7 de balloons out of 10, and I'll leave the other 3 for Willie.
That's right. Oh. You got to leave Willie his share.
That's right. Love that.
All right, Raylene, what's your final summary review here?
All right. So if you would have asked me where this movie was on my scale, just for my memory, 9. Watching it with a critic's eye, it would be at a 5. And I'm going to give it a 7 because it is good fun. The actors are amazing. They all have a really great energy. They do a great job together. I mean, seriously, phenomenal. They obviously took direction really well. I think any issues I had with the movie were not at all with that. And there's pirates and adventure and water slides, danger, skeletons, like gross out stuff. There's bad guys who are capable of committing violence. There's a heartwarming story where Chunk meets somebody who has apparently dropped on his head and now he is completely malformed, which makes no sense. But you know, he didn't even have to ask his mom. He just said, "You're going to come live with me now." So again, really great parents. You could tell that these kids are very supported and loved at home. I love that. And I definitely think everyone should show this movie to their kids once they can hear the word shit and see a clay penis. I think that it is good adventure. And I think that all kids will identify with this movie, even though they are different times. I think that I watched Stand By Me and I was never allowed to leave for days and follow train tracks, but I still felt the spirit of that adventure too. Even though it was decades before I was born. And I think that the spirit of adventure thrives in all of us because that's what we're all looking for, especially boys. I think this movie probably really resonated with boys even more than girls, to be completely honest with you. I always identified with the boy characters a little more than the girls. But I think that out of all the 80s movies, there's normally a lot of nasty, nasty bullying, and the brothers and sisters are really mean to each other. And although we saw a little bit of that with Chunk and Mouth, which is a kind of a stinker, you know, Chunk also deserves it because he's full of shit and he lies. And so I think it kind of works out. And that's just the ribbing that they give him for what he does. And I feel like when the brother was mean, the older brother Brand was mean, you see later where he really comforts his brother when he was emotional. And so it seems kind of like it was understood in kind of a pecking order sort of way. It wasn't so much as bullying as it's just the way that they communicated with each other. But there are very close relationships in this movie. And I think there are much, much worse movies out there that we were watching and probably soaking up subliminally. And I think this one wasn't so bad. Yeah, so 7.
All right, very good. Very good. Not too bad. I agree with a lot of what you guys have both been saying. Granted, we were, I think, a bit harsh in the episode itself. Our reviews are, our scores are actually pretty favorable for this movie. I think it is a nostalgia movie for the most part. Like, I know that you think that kids of this generation will be able to watch this and identify with it. And maybe in a certain respect, but there, it's going to look a little bit foreign to them, the running around on their bikes, just going miles away from home and being out late and whatnot. But for us, for Robert and my, you know, growing up and watching this, like, this reminds us of a time in our life. Granted, we didn't have the Rube Goldberg machine. We didn't find rubies and emeralds and diamonds and things like that. But we did go around into these different you know, types of situations and areas looking for adventures and being out running around. And so for that, like, this kind of holds a place for me in, like, reliving some of that and being able to go back and watch this movie. Has a bit of a sentimental pull to it. The movie itself, it's like a series of scenes that they wanted to have in there. And they wanted to have these set pieces play out, but they didn't really tie them together all that well. So you have to forgive some of those plot holes. And I'm sure some things were cut out because of time and whatnot, but it tells enough of a story to get you down the road to finding Willie's treasure and saving the day in the made up problem that they had in the original opening scene. So overall, it's still pretty good. And you can definitely see that there are a lot of well regarded filmmakers at play here, doing one that, you know, they probably didn't have to, like, bring their A game to make a competent movie that did well at the box office. So with that, I'm going to give this a 6.5, and Goonies Never Say Die.
Fair scores all around. I like it.
Yeah. Fair score. And 7 years ago, we started this podcast. Now I really expected this episode to be more of the adoration of this film rather than the decimation of this film. But, you know, I'll take it. It's content. And
it's a mix.
That's all we're going
for. There's some praise in there.
I think we had to be really honest. I had to really challenge myself to be honest, because I don't want to be. I wanted to keep my glamour. And but
your
then
rose colored,
like,
glasses on?
Yeah. And then I was like, you know, it's still not the quality that Karate Kid is. So, I mean, I got to be honest with you guys. I have to tell the truth and to your listeners. So, but also, can I just say, I love it. I love this stuff. I love this stuff. I never get tired of it. I love this stuff. And, you know, I think that kids are going to still like it. And honestly, if I wasn't looking at it to do a movie podcast about it and it was just on, I'd be enjoying the shit out of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. If you don't have to watch it with a critical eye, and it's just kind of on it, you can background it, and you're like, oh yeah, I remember that scene. And then you kind of do something else, and then, oh yeah, I remember that scene.
Oh yeah, yeah. They're doing the piano scene. I love this scene. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And when we were talking about, this is the time when the audience for this would have been kids who are going out to the mall or going to the arcade and then going to a movie. When we were talking about that, it actually literally reminded me of the date in Karate Kid when she takes he takes the girl to the,
with the montage.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Mini golf and yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And of course you did Karate Kid with us, among other films. So we'll have links to that on the show notes page. Of course, you are a lot of fun. We love having you on, and back to back, 2-2.
Yeah.
So anyway, that'll be our episode for tonight. So you can find the show notes more for this at lastnarrative.com/197. And we'll have links to all of the previous appearances of the wonderful Raylene Lightheart. And Robert, next week, we have a brand new guest we've never had on before, but he's a longtime listener of the show. He's reached out to me a couple times in the past, and we're finally getting him on. He goes by Reverend Lee, and he wants to talk about Swing Kids. Originally, we were talking about Train to Busan because it's getting close to Halloween and going to get, you know, into like zombie and spooky stuff. But he was like, you know, there's probably less to talk about in that than Swing Kids. And so that's why I presented you that question today. And you opted for the Swing Kids.
And that was my exact thinking, because I've seen Train to Busan, which is a fine film, but it's a zombie movie. And they're running away from zombies. And maybe there's a few moral choices that, you know, characters make in extreme situations. You know, do I risk my life to save this person who's probably going to die from a zombie anyway? I mean, I don't know. But it looked like I watched the trailer for Swing Kids. And that definitely looked like it's got some content, even though it does seem to be almost entirely about tap dancing. But it is have a setting of what, like North Korea or something?
Yeah, I don't even know. I haven't seen it.
Okay.
So we will find out. But Reverend Lee was saying that it kind of ties into Newsies, has some of the same cast.
And it didn't look like there was any singing.
Okay.
Yeah, good.
Raylene, do you know? Does it have singing?
I don't know, but I hate musicals. And I'm with Robert on.
Raylene has excellent taste.
And there's only like I've two always or said three that I'll watch.
I've always said Raylene has excellent taste.
Yes, I do. That's right. Yes, I do. You did like the movie I picked, like that I picked when I picked a movie. It was Eternal Sunshine. You liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eternal Sunshine is a great movie.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I'm not a musical person. So, and I didn't like Newsies. Remember, I told you that. I said it was just like Mighty Ducks without all the good fart jokes. And so I was like into which singing. I don't like it.
Yeah, we still had a lot to talk about on that one though. So I think it was well worth the pain and suffering of watching that and listening to the singing about going to Santa Fe.
Mm-hmm. Was it?
Was it though? Was it really?
I never finished Newsies. I couldn't watch it. I turned it off, guys. It's bad. I'm embarrassing. I can't take me anywhere.
Just listen to our episode and you'll hear all you need. All right. Well, anyway, thanks again, Raylene. We'll, of course, have links and everything, like I was saying. And we will see everyone next week for Swing Kids. And we'll see how that one turns out with our new friend, Reverend Lee. And with that, we'll say goodnight from last night, everyone. Peace out. All right, we have a few more minutes on the actual Anarchy podcast. This is not yet the bonus content. I just want to make that clear to Raylene, our guest, because last week she thought that we were in the bonus content already. Mm-hmm. And so we went into some subjects that were probably a bit taboo. And if it's not yet banned on YouTube or on our podcast players anywhere, give a listen to that last section, because we get into some things that people probably aren't going to be allowed to say much more or are not allowed to say. So be sure to check that out, because we did leave that in. But with that preface, we did not get to this discussion point, and that is earlier in the pre-show bonus content. Both of you were talking about seeing the scenes and the setting of the scenes in this movie, the establishing shots, reminded you both of where we grew up and how things were mm-hmm. when we grew up. Mm-hmm. And I thought that that was maybe an interesting discussion point. Because I don't know if things are really like that in those areas anymore.
It still looks like that in my town.
Okay.
I will drive downtown next time. I'm going to take a picture of right on the water, right where my little preschool was as a kid, right where my mom grew up. I'm going to send you guys a picture and you're going to go, it looks exactly like the Goonies and just like what you guys saw as kids. I'm telling you. Do you remember that part where Andy is doing her cheerleading practice mm-hmm. and they're in the mud and it's gray and it's wet and they're doing cheerleading practice and the football players might be in the background. I don't remember. I think there's some sports people back there doing stuff. And you're just looking at the weather going, yep, that's where we live. Like that is just where we live.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember every day walking, just even if you just did the bus, okay? And the backs of your jeans would wick water up the backs of your legs.
Oh, yeah.
The backs of your shoes would just spray water up the backs of your legs. Sure. You guys, I'm scarred for life that when it rains, I don't want to go to the grocery store because I don't want to feel muddy water going up on the top of like the backs of my legs anymore. I don't want to do it again. I did it enough, you know?
She's had a belly full for one lifetime.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Rob, yeah, were you thinking that this was like where we grew up?
Well, I knew it wasn't, but a lot of these towns look very, very similar. It reminded me a bit of like Anacortes mixed with Stanwood, mixed with a few other coastal towns, you know, complete with the fog or the mist and the rolling hills and the trees. And then the houses all look the same. So, yeah, it was very... It was like looking at my hometown, not exactly, but you know, if you make an amalgamation of all the little towns in Northwest Washington or Oregon on the coast areas, it's just, it gave me the feels. I'll just say that.
Okay. All right. The town I'm in right now is a bit more of hip, I guess, and more expensive. So there's a lot of like torn down and then rebuilt fancy kind of houses. But the little downtown area, I guess the city council is very adamant about there not being any like architecture that's chain style. So it's all
city ordinances.
Yeah. And in a way, like there is a certain appeal to that. Like there's a town in Washington called Leavenworth that everything is like German and Alpine and whatever. And that's kind of like the thing that it's sort of known like for. And
Bavarian. It's really cute.
Yeah, it certainly has a more of appeal than just your random strip mall that could have been in Orlando or it could have been in, you know, Van Nuys, you know, or anywhere else, Tupelo. So there is a certain appeal to that aspect of it. We did go a little bit north today to a town called Seaside.
Yeah.
And that has like not changed since I was last year, like 20, 25 years ago.
Seaside is perfectly nostalgic. The little stores, especially in the summer when everything's crazy popping usually, right? It is super fun to go in all those places and you're going to find like, you know, $80 hand knitted sweaters that somebody down the street made and put it in this store, you know, like you will find all that stuff. You'll meet this guy at the rock store that starts telling you that he wouldn't be on Facebook because of the CIA was tracking your facial recognition when I went 12 years ago and he was right about everything. like that is real about Seaside. It is so fun. I like the nostalgia. I like it looking like that. I like all the houses that are one's apricot, one is white with a mint green, you know, window trim, and then the weird little fences that nothing matches, but it all matches, right? And that's mm-hmm. what mm-hmm. Goonies had in that when they panned the little town. It's exactly like what I grew up in. Yeah.
There's a bit of a making of that came out in 2010, which we just watched it because it was on Amazon Prime. It was like we were looking for Goonies and this came up and it's like making of a cult classic, making of Goonies. Mm. It's about a half an hour long. And for being made in 2010, it certainly looks a hell of a lot older, but it has interviews with the cast members and Richard Donner, who apparently in everyday conversation with his friends goes by Dick. So Dick Donner, even though he's always credited as Richard Donner. But he said that they drove all the way from LA, all the way up the coast, looking for the right kind of setting.
Yeah.
And they had to go all the way up to the northernmost point in Oregon along the coast to find what they were looking for. That's a pretty long little adventure to find the right spot. But I think Astoria and Cannon Beach plays.
I think that's really why they mentioned Astoria so often. I think that it was such a treasure and it was so unique and exactly what they were looking for. I think that must be what we were talking about earlier in the show, why they kept mentioning Astoria, why that was so important and integral to what they were saying. They mentioned this city name so often mm-hmm. that it stood out to me. So it must have meant something cool.
Yeah, and it is a beautiful area down here, so we're enjoying it. It's our big vacation for the year. We haven't been anywhere in a while.
Yeah, neat.
Yeah, it takes a lot usually for you to even leave the house, so this is kind of impressive.
Yeah, well, it did take a lot of energy to get the vehicle loaded up, and we actually have our car needed a lot of work, so we took it to the dealer to get work done, and they gave us a brand new car. For the week or two that the car needs to be fixed. So we're like rolling around in style, not having to pay for, I am paying out the nose for the car repair.
That's right.
But I'm not paying any extra to drive.
You feel like Daddy Warbucks with the kids. You're like, ooh, heated seats, guys. These windows roll down without by a button. You don't even have to roll it down by your hand.
You don't have to like hand crank this sucker.
And why would you want to leave? I never want to leave either. And when your treasure is at home, I'm a dragon. Okay. I'm gonna hang out with my horde. Like, why would I go anywhere? I have everything I need.
I think a lot of it is mindset. The one downside of being home all the time or very much is that the weeks go by and you don't even notice.
Mm. But why do you need to? Is there some goal that you have? And that's the trap. If you are ignoring what you're supposed to be doing because you have a goal, or you have to reset your intention and realize none of that matters and you're actually living your best life. Not caring what day and time it is, just enjoying what you got.
So either way, it's mindset. But this does break up our routine a bit, so this will stand out for us. And as much as I don't like my job, every time Monday rolls around, I'm like, God damn it, I got to go back to doing this. But then the next thing I notice, I'm like telling my wife, like, it's already Friday. Sweet. Yeah. You know, it just goes so quickly. At least as long as I have the job, we'll see if they require anything in the next couple of weeks.
Bro, I've been hearing some really good news from a lot of people about like religious exemptions being taken. It's kind of interesting. They're still not giving people forms for their medical exemptions and not giving forms to fill out. There's some weird stuff happening. I don't think even a lot of people that have been giving me updates locally, because we have a lot of military bases in Washington. We have a lot of people who work for DOD. We have a lot of hospitals in Washington just because I live within the half an hour of three of them, right? And so all the people I know, they're saying, the bosses are saying that Biden is handing down these mandates. But then people that are working for the federal government, nobody knows who to turn any exemptions into and if there's a form for exemption. There is nothing being handed down or given to anybody. We're talking about captains of naval shipyards don't have any information. And they're like, hey, nobody do anything rash. Hey, don't quit. We can't replace anybody with their training. We have nobody to do that with. I don't know. I don't know what's going on, guys, but they don't know what's going on. So even with the hospitals, they're saying, you know, even if you turn this in, you are not going to get any hours. Well, that's discrimination. If you have an exemption, they can't cut your hours, you know, but there's some weird stuff getting said. So I think we're in a very gray territory. And I think this is just a push to see how many stragglers they can get to just voluntarily do it before there's an actual fight.
Oh, yeah. They don't want to fight. They just want everybody to comply without it.
Just absolutely. Saying the words and applying that soft pressure that this is happening seems to be pushing people to go do it because they're scared.
So, yeah, it's like a mantra. Everybody's doing it.
Yeah. Meanwhile,
the people that aren't doing it are bad.
And when we were growing up, Robert, when the Goonies was the nostalgic thing, we were in drug abuse resistance education. And Nancy Reagan was saying, just say no. Don't give in to peer pressure.
Peer pressure used to be a bad thing. Now it's a good thing. Give it the time, Daniel.
Now it's the best thing. Anyway, we should probably end it there. So this has been the Actual Anarchy Podcast talking about the Goonies with the wonderful Raylene Lightheart. And the show notes for this one is actualanarchy.com/254. And we will be back next week doing Swing Kids with Reverend Lee. Right? Reverend Lee? Yeah, that's what I've written down here. Reverend Lee. That's the name he goes by. That'll be a fun one. And we will see you guys all next week. We'll do a little bit of bonus content right after this. You can get that at actualanarchy.com/Patreon. And Raylene, thanks again. We do really enjoy your appearances.
I love you guys. Thanks.
All right. And thank you, Robert. Thank you for being my friend and my co-host.
Oh, my pleasure, buddy.
All right. It's a bunch of feels all around here. And we'll say maximum premium, everyone. Peace out.
Chipmunks. CHIPMUNK. We're the chipmunks. Guaranteed to brighten your day. Do, 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 do.